Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast gab fest where in a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, our identity, culture, what we like to read, and who we like to read. Food for Thought.
Dinner is served, bitch!
Dennis is eating fries as we speak.
And drinking rosé in the same breath.
I'm Tommy Pico, Indigenous American poet, editor,
and frisson-in-chief.
But true. I am Dennis Norris II. I am a writer, reader, former figure skater, which is exciting because it is Olympic season. And I shit Swarovski crystals. Yes, I do.
I don't know what that is. I'm Joseph Osmondson, scientist, nonfiction writer, subtop. And my sexuality is the battle between my crippling anxiety and Lexapro. And shut up, Dennis. Dennis is laughing, but he has too many fries in his mouth to do it on camera.
I like a full mouth.
It's true. I'm Heron Walker. I'm your guest thought of the week. I'm a freelance journalist. I'm hella binary / hella single. And I'm still not sure if cishet pegging is T-girl appropriation.
And yes, thank you, Heron, for being our fourth chair this week as Fran is off on another assignment. Also, what you said, Joe, reminded me of this tweet that I had, which was like, and very timely, and it probably doesn't even make sense anymore, which was like, catch me inside, because like, I have anger issues, but I'm still crippling agoraphobic. Anyway, who's got the menu this week?
I do. It's Joe. This week on our little show, Teebs makes us kill our darlings, throw away our faves, and pretend we're Sophie and have to make our choices. I talk about my steamy sex situations, and we give you all our bodies to see, eat, and touch. Nom, 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 nom. Take
Thanks
it away.
For coming on me.
Buck, 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 ah! Feeling a little peckish.
We're going to start the top of this show the way any good top should, with a little tease. Our nibblicious amuse boosh segment. And to amuse your booshes this week, we're playing a little game called Homonym, wherein we compare sonically similar lists of pop culture flotsam, a homonym for all you word nerds, to determine the cream of the crop. First up, we've got Mariah Carey, Jim Carrey, Carrie Fisher, and Carrie the horror movie.
Ooh. What order are we going?
Heron, let's go with Heron first. Heron, what do you think? Which one is the best?
Oh, so best in terms of queerest, gayest, or just like the best of all?
Which is the one that you prefer?
Oh, that's unfair because I love Vengeance, but I also love every song on Emancipation of Mimi.
It's really good.
Especially the We Belong Together remix. I have to go with Mimi.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Mimi 100%.
Yeah, Carrie, Back to the Ground, No Emancipation for You.
Okay, so Joe says Mimi as well. Dennis?
I'ma also go with Mimi. I'm very particularly going to go with Mimi at last year's New Year's Eve performance because that was Mimi at her Mimi-est. And it gave me my entire life.
You know, my favorite is the video of her air quote dancing, where her dancers are just sort of lifting her up and bending her back and then placing her back on her heels. It's so perfect.
Luxury.
I would just like to live my life like that.
The next one.
I do live my life like that.
Yeah, you actually do. Dennis actually does.
Except without the 90s success, Dennis.
Without the success.
That hand turkey was beautiful, okay?
Thank you. My teachers would say differently.
Okay, next up is something a little bit controversial. I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston versus I Will Always Love You by Dolly Parton.
Fuck you.
Heron,
That's just fucking rude. I feel like they are, to avoid answering the question, I feel like they are two sides of the same coin. Mm. You're missing someone. Dolly Parton's version, the original, is like the low hum of regret and wistfulness that's always coursing through you. Whitney's is when it hits you and you're just on the subway and you're like, cool, I'm crying. And the person next to you is like, I'm just going to work.
Very astute, as they say.
Joe, please. I mean, Dolly Parton is basically my sexuality, but so is the Whitney Houston version of that song. So I think you're right. They're different moods. It's like,
so you're bisexual?
nice to meet you. Yeah, no, it's I take them all in. It's like I have one of them is the dick I have in my mouth, and the other is the dick I have in my ass.
Okay, gotcha.
It's just like Jane Austen.
Very good way of putting it.
That is
spit roasted by Dolly Parton and Whitney Houston.
I mean, so two tops. Every faggot's dream. But
noted
for
tops.
Me, I would have to say that similar to Joe, I like them both. And here's the thing. Whitney's version is the iconic one, the one you hear in your head when you think of the song, the one you go to, the one that every wannabe singer is going to try and sing.
On American Idol.
On American Idol. And Dolly Parton is okay with this. Guess why?
Because she's every getting time paid. That happens,
she has the receipt.
That's true.
She has the receipt. So it's, to me, it's just a beautiful conglomeration. Mm. I love them both.
We're so gay.
Next up, we've got enemies, anemones, enemas, and M&Ms.
M&M enema, you say?
That okay.
That's a rainbow I could taste.
Peanuts or almonds or plain?
Crispy.
Not the crispy. Yes. Not the crispy. I mean, this is Joe, and I will say enemas, obviously.
Hmm. Dennis?
I'm going to say anemone because it's a really pretty word.
Next up, we've got mumblecore, normcore, mini corns, or corny porn.
Corny porn, absolutely.
Obviously corny porn. This was not on the list, Tommy. I did not prepare for this
one. I did it tonight. You know when there's just like corn stalks in the porn? Ears of corn in the porn.
I just have like this three-walled beige room that has a window that's just the idea of a window. just like take me there.
Oh, God.
Dennis?
That just took me back to the Rugrats theme song. just randomly, that just sort of popped into my head.
That's Dennis's corny porn.
And I was going to say corny porn, and I'm thinking very specifically about that scene in The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt when Titus is trying to expose that man for gay, and he has a corn husk, and he, like, shucks it in front of him.
I was having a conversation about how, this is Joe, I've been fucked by lots of different vegetables, and apparently most people have not been fucked by lots of different vegetables.
That's not a thing. No. That's
define law.
Man, life on the farm. Salad.
More than three different types of vegetable.
Is the tomato a vegetable? No follow-up
questions.
Like,
the tomato is a fruit.
Next up, we've got Call Me Maybe, Call Me By Your Name, and You Used to Call Me on Your Cell Phone.
Heron? You can't just like ask me my thoughts on Call Me By Your Name when I haven't asked any of you your thoughts. Fine. I'm going to take the risk and admit that it was really good and I loved it and I cried a lot and I thought it was beautiful and I thought the way that they showed the desire when you're finally able to express it and not have to keep it hidden was really, really apt. And, I was in a room full of crying people and it was wonderful and great. So, Call Me By Your Name.
Except Joe.
As much as I love a room full of crying people.
Yeah, that's like your thing.
It is my thing. I'm going to go with Call Me Maybe. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I didn't care for the book.
Me neither.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dennis?
I'm not going to lie. I'm going to go with You Used to Call Me on Your Cell Phone because...
Of course Dennis would go with the low-key misogyny.
What?
For me, that's all about... remembering the fact that, yeah, I used to call you on your cell phone, and you're sad about the fact that now I don't.
Next up, we've got Nancy Kerrigan, Nancy Drew, Nancy Pelosi, and a Nancy the Spider.
Why? Did you even put any other choices in there? It's obviously Nancy Kerrigan. This is Heron.
Go ahead.
I hate Nancy Kerrigan, but it's obviously Nancy Kerrigan. I don't like any of those other choices.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Nancy Kerrigan.
Oh, wow. We agree too much with one another.
Yeah. Speaking of Nancy Pelosi, did anyone see the tweet?
Grossy Pelosi. I'm not Grossy Pelosi anymore.
Yeah. Totally Rufus. So she is going to be a judge on the season of Drag Race, and she tweeted something that makes me never going to have, I'm never going to have sex again, because she tweeted, "You better work. I'm Nancy Pelosi."
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Glad we're all celibate now.
Yeah. my butthole is closed.
To carry on that, next up we've got Dave Chappelle, Dave Franco, Dave Matthews, and Dave and Buster's. And I think this one has to be the one that you hate the most, because they all suck.
All of them.
Oh, God. Dave and Buster's sucks. It sucks. They don't have any good games, and it's all fucking expensive. And I love arcades. That personally offends me. Yeah, Dave and Buster's personally offends me. They never have Street Fighter or nothing. All they have is those dumb zombie games and the ones where like you can put like a quarter into a thing and get like two tokens.
I'll tell you real fan teams.
Oh, that's sad. Yeah. Wait, did Dave Franco treat women worse than the average man has?
That depends on how we think the average man has treated
women. So
that's complicated.
Dave and Buster's has food.
I have Joe will admit to having had Dave Matthews Band be his first concert of all time.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think I have to go with that just because.
And you were just about to call Dennis out on low-key misogyny. Like,
yeah,
thank you.
No, I know.
Dave Matthews Band's tour bus once dumped an entire tour bus load of shit on a passing boat underneath a bridge.
I was
Look it up.
In my defense, I was 16 at the time.
He was like God to all those little prep school boys I went to school with in high school.
So that's your choice as well?
No. So my choice is going to be Dave and Buster's, because that's the place, if I'm ever feeling like I want to try and get down with a guy who like should be on the Jersey Shore. Like sometimes I want some of that like action. So Dave and Buster's in Philly.
Okay.
Yeah, it's happened.
Next up, we've got Sandra Bullock, Sandra Oh, Sandra Cisneros, or Sandra Bernhardt. I'm going to go ahead and say mine, which is Sandra Cisneros, because Catamelo, the novel, was like really big for me in high school.
I would have to go with Sandra Bernhardt just for like embodying outrageous, uncontrollable dykiness from before I could really put any of those words to what I was seeing on that Madonna interview on Letterman.
Word. Heron, again, like you're just taking all my answers. I 100% agree. She's just like queer icon from before I knew what queerness was.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Sandra Oh, because I think she's an incredible actress. And when she got started on Grey's Anatomy, which was obviously not her start, but that was like kind of when she really began to be more well-known, there really weren't very many Asian actresses on TV, like period, point blank. That representation is important. And she did an amazing job. I love her. Also, my sister worked with her once in theater like 20 years ago and said she was really, really sweet.
Aww.
One of my favorite quotes from Drag Race was when they were doing like, "Oh, no, she better don't," was Sandra, "Oh, no, she better don't." I like that one. And next up, we've got Toni Braxton, Tony Hawk, Toni Morrison, and Tony the Tiger. Heron, you're going first.
Oh, my God. I almost want to say Tony Hawk just for, like, to be a dick. But whom is the first tone?
Toni Braxton.
Ooh. I have to. I one time saw her and her sisters perform at a Tide-sponsored event, and the sisters had to talk about why they love Tide. No, it was Gain. They called themselves Gainiacs.
Oh, my God.
And Toni had clearly negotiated somewhere in her contract to not have to talk about Gain and just come out and sing Unbreak My Heart by, like, crawling through the crowd.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean,
I would do that. Capitalism.
I am a rock hard right now.
Shocking no one.
Toni Morrison for me, obviously. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean,
no one.
I mean, even though Toni Braxton is the person who gave me the language that I so often use to describe the men who screw me over, which is, "He wasn't man enough for me."
That silver top.
That's actually low-key my favorite Toni Braxton song.
It's the best song.
It's so fucking good.
God, another sad love song.
Ooh, right?
So true.
She's amazing. I also have to go with Toni Morrison simply because everything she does, everything she says, gives me, like, life beyond belief. I think she's God, pretty much. So.
And finally, we've got Fran Drescher, Fran Lebowitz, Frances Ha, or Fran Tirado?
So Fran, I'm really sorry. You're gonna listen to this in a couple weeks, a couple days. I don't know when this is going on the air, but it has to be Fran Drescher. She, fashion icon in conversation sartorially with Lil Kim, contemporary of hers, yes. Fashion wise, yes. Anti-capitalist in yes. her post nanny career.
Yes.
Made nasal voices beautiful, big hair, large heels, Jewish representation in the mainstream.
Sheffield. And to
officiated a gay wedding.
Yeah. And I think Fran Tirado would also choose Fran Drescher.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
I choose everyone but Fran Tirado. He's gone. I killed him. He's never coming back.
Fran Tirado died on the way to prom night 25 years ago. What are you talking about?
I don't know her.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, Fran Drescher, the nanny. Classic television. Everything.
Well, then that's a wrap.
That is a wrap. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for letting us amuse your douches.
Woo!
For our net segment. Excuse me, let me try that again. Our net segment.
Our next segment.
Our nothing but net segment.
For our nothing but net. I need more wine.
Let's talk about next. The theme is next.
Chicken next? Because we're a bunch of bird ass bitches?
Listen.
Chicken ass. For our next segment, our impure thought, spelled T-H-O-T, is brought to you by Joe O. the Science O. this week.
Yeah, so, you know, the theme of our main segment this week is bodies. And, you know, I think we all here, we're going to talk about it, but we all have sort of a complicated relationship to fitness and health and bodies and trying to sort of, you know, both stay in shape. We're all getting older, be this quote-unquote best version of ourselves, but also, like, critique that at the same time, where it's like, you know, it's fitting into boxes, it's very capitalist, it's very, like, consumerist, and it, like, allows other people to consume us and allows us to consume other people. I started going to the gym really seriously when I had a mental health crisis towards the end of my PhD, and I really didn't know how to deal with my anxiety, and so I started going to the gym, and what happened is it, like, totally transformed my body in ways that got me a lot of attention, and then it became this complicated thing where it's like I'm doing it for my anxiety, but then also, like, I also kind of like the attention, and I love, more than anything, hooking up in the gym. It is just like so
I can't believe you. Much. I mean, I guess I can, but I mean, I guess I can because it's you. But
yeah,
you
yeah. Too.
I tried. I said I gave a German underwear model.
Like, I'm not here to call you out on this.
I gave a German underwear model a half blow job one time in the shower at the gym. Okay, that's I couldn't. Do
I mean, who would not do that?
I have two short stories that I want to share from my adventures in the gym. And this doesn't involve the orgy that I happened to walk into on an NYSC where it had been organized on Craigslist. And I just walked in and it was like 13 people all fucking. And I was like, huh. Like, okay. But I was at the gym the other day and I was in the locker room and a boy, you know, we kind of like make out and it's kind of coy. It's really sexy. Nothing really happens.
So you're just like in the locker room. You're not like in a steam room. You're not like in a shower.
No, it's just kind of like he really likes me. This boy really, really, and he is so fine. Like body, cute face. He seems really nice. And he's like kissing me on the neck and he goes, hey, like, can I get your number? Right. And I'm like, great. This is great. You know, it wasn't a hookup. I didn't have time for that. It wasn't the mood for that, but like, maybe we'll date and he'll be my husband. And then, so I give him my number. He texts me right away. And I'm like, yes, he texts me right away. And he comes through as a number in my phone.
Oh.
He was previously my phone. And this engages with an official Joe Osmondson thought life hack where you put everyone who you ever talk to ever in your phone. And even if you don't know their names, you use a code. Where, like, everyone I meet on Grindr, I save their last name in my phone as Grend, because it's not Grindr. So it's like you could look through my phone and not see a bunch of Grinders.
But then you're just like, oh, he's had sex with, like, 10 Grends? Like, is this a family
But you would never
affair?
See
like,
them all together because it organizes them by first name. All of my scruff boys.
Some big love bullshit.
All of my scruff boys, I use their last name as Samuel because I love last names that are also first names. So this boy came through in my phone as his name.
You're a sociopath.
And then PF, which stood for Planet Fitness, because I realized that I had met him 3 years prior at Planet Fitness, and we had hooked up in the locker room there.
No, the Planet Fitness locker room?
Yes, and he was so thirsty.
It's yellow and purple. It's so
and he was so because at Planet Fitness, one does not hook up in the gym locker room. It's just not for that. He was so thirsty that the locker room was full. Every shower was being used. He got into the shower stall with me, and there was like an old man across and a man next to us. And it wasn't hot to
no
me.
No judgment zone.
No judgment zone. No lunks allowed. I love public sex, but I don't like feeling like I might get arrested. So it actually was like super not hot to me, even though he was super hot, because I was like,
How I only gave somebody a half blowjob.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that, I mean, I actually like this sort of code of like hooking up in a steam room where you have to kind of negotiate everyone's consent and make sure that no one's going to get anyone in trouble. But the next story is the solution to all of that, because I was on Grindr one night and I was talking to this boy and he was like, I'm like, what you doing? And he was like, oh, I'm at work. I'm like, where are you work? He's like, I work at the gym. And I'm not going to say the name of the gym because I don't want to get him fired. But he just happened to be closing a gym. Mm. And it was a gym that I had gone to for a certain time and had a certain romantic longing for the little space that was made in that gym. And he just happened to be closing. And he said, well, my coworker's about to go home. So if you just want to come by, we can totally plow in the empty gym locker room.
Wow, plow.
That's hot.
Mr. Plow, that's my name. That is hot. My name again is Mr. Plow.
and I went in, I had to wait on the side entrance, and he came and popped through the door. We had to walk through like 7 different stores in the little complex to get into the back entrance of the gym. We go down to the locker room and like just totally hook up in this like very sexy space that I know has seen so much gay sex, but it was like no fear of like getting in trouble. It was amazing. It was amazing. I love sort of that, the kind of public-private space that you can make in gyms, and how like gyms are all about using your body and kind of being physical and sharing that physical space with other people. And so it's like and after I work out, I just get so horny. So really? It's like, oh my
so
god!
So it's like that. Like that. Is it because you like you looked over to the left? You were looking so good. You had to touch yourself. Like, were you looking at yourself in the mirror?
I do not. I have a lot of relationships with my own body, but definitely not that one. Like, no.
I also like to. I like your method of entering people's names into your phone.
Yeah.
Mine is you don't get a name. You don't get a name until like unless we've hung out like 7 times, and then I'm like, okay, you get a name now.
But I think the thing that is important for me is that I want the knowledge. So if someone texts me out of nowhere after a year, I want to know exactly who that motherfucker is and know all of the context, and then knowing everything, go new phone, who this? Like knowing exactly. I cannot wait for my ex who moved away to like text me and to be like, hi, who is this again? And just like, I want that moment so badly.
The bitchiest move I ever learned when I was 20 from someone, I went to a liberal, or I visited a friend at her sister's liberal arts school. And it was like just one of those mean ass, like in the middle of a mountain in Western Massachusetts, like they're all cloistered up, don't have access to any of the fun drugs or anything. Social interactions. They create crazy power structures. Yeah, and like all want to kill each other, and like she was just like, here's how to win, just extend your hand lightly and go, and you are
exactly.
I was like, you're fucked
every time.
That's everything.
I'm gonna start waiting for them to be like, oh my god, hey, your name, like, hey Joe, and you are
also. I like to be like, if I'm meeting up with an ex and they're like, it's so good to see you, and it's like, it is, isn't it? I agree. It's great to see me. I do it every day. I'm so excited.
It never gets old. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is. For that. I mean, the only thing I'll say about not having people in your phone is it takes away the desire to text them.
Yeah, no, that's one of the reasons why I just don't have names in there. Because I know what I'm liable to do after dark liquor.
That is so true.
The thought life hack for never texting an ex is to delete them all from your phone. The thought life hack for being able to be like, and you are, is to keep all of them in your phone all the time.
Yeah, I'm a Virgo, so all this talk about code names and not real names is like really just ungodly. First name, last name.
I have
end of discussion, please. Thank you.
I have a Google Doc spreadsheet. But the funny
you
thing
have
is
the funny directory thing is here in the room.
The code is it extends as well, because I will admit to having slept with quite a few people whose first names I don't know. And so then I code them by a name that sounds like the avenue that they live near. Right. It's like there's a whole system.
If he lives on Ralph Avenue, Ralph.
Exactly. if he lives, there's one who lived near Lexington and his name is Lex in my phone.
I love it. Have you ever gone down the list of people you've hooked up with, and like the ones you don't remember? It's like, Herbalife guy.
Yeah, or,
like,
totally. Oh, totally.
Cigarette mouth wouldn't watch Simpsons with me after.
Oh,
gone. Get out.
Oh my god.
And on that, I think it's time we move on to our next segment. Yeah.
This message comes from iHeartRadio sponsor, Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should really think about getting a quote from Mercury, because Californians save an average of $677 with Mercury. It's quick and easy, and in just a few minutes, you might find you could save a lot of money on your auto and home insurance. Plus, Mercury was named one of America's best insurance companies by Insure.com 4 years in a row. Low rates, big discounts, great insurance. Go to MercuryInsurance.com today to get a quote.
It's crazy how much we have to pay for outdated, impersonal healthcare, and even crazier that we all just accept it. It's time to face facts. Healthcare is backwards. Luckily, there's Forward, a new approach to primary care that's surprisingly personal and refreshingly straightforward. Forward never makes you feel like just another patient. Backed by top-rated doctors and the latest tech, Forward gives you access to personalized care whenever you need it. Using in-depth genetic analysis and real-time blood work, Forward's top-rated doctors provide you with in-depth insights to better understand your genetics, mental, and physical health. They then create custom, easy-to-understand plans to help guide you to achieving long-term health. With Forward, you get unlimited in-person visits with your doctor and access to care anytime via the Forward app, all for one flat monthly fee. It's time to stop accepting backwards healthcare and start moving your health forward. Visit GoForward.com today to learn more. That's GoForward.com.
Sticky notes, email alerts, a string around your finger. They're just not big enough.
So here's a big reminder from the California Lottery. Tonight's Mega Millions jackpot is over 350 million. Whew. Play now. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 years or older to purchase player client.
Hi, guys. Katie Lowe's here. You might know me as Quinn Perkins on Scandal. I'm also the host of Katie's Crib, a podcast about all things parenthood. Katie's Crib is back with new episodes every Thursday. We have got such an awesome lineup of guests. Michelle Buteau on having twins, Katerina Scorsone on raising three children, Kat McPhee Foster on being a new mom. We'll be covering everything from discipline to mom-ring. Tune in. Listen to Katie's Crib on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For the meat of our discussion, the thought process spelled T-H-O-T, we're going to touch all this skin, honey, and talk about body-oddy-oddies. One thing we consistently get in our inbox and our DMs and our mentions is people wanting us to talk about and disseminate queer body image, from standards of beauty, pretty privilege and the cult of the gym, dysmorphias, loving our limp-wristedness, being vulnerable as queer bodies in public, or consequently to, quote, passing as straight. And we're probably going to bring up a lot of difficult issues and talk about some very sensitive topics, but, you know, try to do it in a very ethical and respectful way. But first, I want to say this frivolous little anecdote. So last week, I was getting a lift in L.A., and the driver was playing Beyonce the Visual Album when I got in. And I was like, first of all, you're getting 5 stars. And then Rockets came on, and we both started singing it. And we were both being like so dramatic and full voice that he pulled the car over, put on his blinkers so we could finish the song proper. And Rockets, of course, starts off with like, let me sit this ass on you. You know, and it's like it's an ode to her body. And it inspired this line in my first book, IRL, which was like, there's my body, and then there's your body. Mm. Basically the plot of every Beyonce song.
Yeah.
And her extolling the virtue of her own body is like such a turn on. And I was wondering, do you remember the first time you were turned on by like a dude's body or an Ooh. Early time? Because I remember being, I was very young. I was at the beach and there was this guy who was like adjusting his waistband. And I saw a little bit of the dick and I was like, what is going on in my brain right now? Like, I was like a California wildfire. Like, I did not know what to do. I didn't know what I felt. All I knew was, like, I got a charge from the eyeing of his scars. You know? Like, I got a charge, a very large charge.
God, those early memories are the best.
I do, at first I was like, oh, thank God, I can't think of anything. Then I was like, no way I can. I do remember having to be let out of a Spencer Gifts by some poor teenage employee when I was like 8, because I kept looking at the novelty naked dude cards.
Yeah, with but like just like in the swimsuits,
just like in the as in the same way that like in the library when you find the dictionary with the illustrations of the human body that are like completely not attractive or sexy and are just like lines with eyeballs, but somehow it's still like, why, yes, that is a vulva and a penis. Like, it was just like, I was like, well, look at that. Oh, I also, oh my God, I was at a bookstore and I found like a tantric yoga It was just like, ball sacks look weird.
No, the sexuality section of the Barnes & Noble, yeah. or Borders, or whatever it was.
Waiting for someone to lead me out, and nobody caught me. I was like, I can't keep doing this.
I'm like so such a latecomer to it. It was definitely, for me, it was a locker room, actually, so that I still find sex in these spaces is not surprising anyone. No, it was in college, and I played soccer for a couple of years in college, and, you know, the sort of, like, boy horsing around all of those, like, soccer bods and, like, all of the, like, there was this amazing person who did a piece, she's somewhere in England, on, like, how leaders in sports teams are chosen, and what he found is that a lot of people, this was not like a quantitative survey, he just like talked to people, and what he found is that a lot of people said that they sort of like deferred to people with bigger dicks, and that like men in the locker room in team sports would get semis on purpose to make it seem like their dicks were bigger, not in like a gay way necessarily, but just
in a gay way.
Sports are so homosocial, right? And yeah. So like I think that testing boundaries and allowing for free zones of pleasure or whatever, like it definitely happens there. Fuck you, team.
Noted, great word, free zone.
Oh my god. That's interesting to me, Joe, that has always been one of your most erotic spaces for your attraction to men, because like that particular space and that dynamic was like terrifying for me growing up. Like I was attracted to boys, like I've been attracted to guys for as long as I can remember, but like that space where guys are horsing around and where there's all this potential for homoeroticism was like my most terrifying space. That was a space that felt very threatening for me. But in terms of to take the award of the most basic bitch at the table, I will be very honest and tell you that the first time that I was aware of being attracted to anyone or anything was a scene on the Today Show where they showed a scene of Brad Pitt shirtless in a canoe in the movie Legend of the Fall, and he had long hair, and he was Brad Pitt with his muscular body, and I just was like, what is this? Yeah. Like, what is happening? And around that same time, the two other things that would happen were there were these two boys in my, like, first grade class who would, like, show off their muscles to each other, and, like, I would just stare at them. And also, whenever I would go to the airport with my family, I was attracted to the men who would walk through the airport. They just, like, always looked, like, very dignified, very strong. They'd have these polo shirts on with a little hair sticking out, like, chest hair sticking out.
Airport was this? This
well, I mean, this was obviously starting was in Cleveland, but like, we would, it was everything. I would just notice, I would be like, men are so sexy in the airport. Like,
men are so sexy. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, my
airports.
My old roommate, D, I'm not going to say his name because I don't know if he wants me to say his business, but he said he remembers being with his dad at an Air Force base and being turned on and being like, oh, I am so gay.
Oh, wow.
I am so gay.
I mean, what does it mean that some of, like, at least for Dennis and I, we very much, our first attractions were to these sort of like idolized, masculine, quote unquote masculine, butch, like muscular male bodies.
Is that, again, like we talked about the mutability of desire and stuff like that in past episodes, but it is like, I feel like I'm like muscular bodies, cut bodies, whatever, that kind of shit, it doesn't turn me on. But it took me a long time to figure out that, like, and because it's a constant struggle to remember what it is that you actually find attractive, because like society is beaming you these images and these bodies, and also I kind of wonder, like, why is body scrutiny such a big thing? And I was going to say, like, in queer spaces, but I feel much better in queer spaces. I'm talking, like, in gay male spaces.
Gay male spaces, yeah.
Why is that body scrutiny so huge? I mean, I remember one time somebody who was you know, muscular was telling me that, like, the reason that he worked out all the time and made his body very big was a response to feeling very small when he was younger and being bullied and... And then somebody else telling me that it was like theoretically a response to like having a quote healthy body in the wake of the HIV epidemic, you know, something like that, maybe we're hardwired to surveil our bodies because of what happened to us when we were younger, that we did feel like we were being looked at, that our bodies could be a tell, you know, that like that if we walked a certain way, if we cocked our hips a certain way, if we tilted our head a certain way, that we would automatically, you know, be outed as queer. That so I'm just curious of what some of your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, like I think that it all goes back to, it's not even just like something that starts from within you. It is something that we enter into and learn quickly, even if we're not aware we're learning it, that all bodies are surveyed and like caught in this. There's this phrase that Eric A. Stanley uses in this book, Captive Genders, Trans Embodiment in the Prison Industrial Complex, that it talks about how we're all born into these webs of surveillance. It's just that trans and gender nonconforming people in the context of this book, and like other marginalized people, like not everyone feels the strands of this web as strongly as everyone else, and not everyone is even necessarily aware that they're in these webs of surveillance or participating in the surveying.
And they're surveying themselves as
surveying themselves, and often the effect when you're a very heavily surveyed body, like women, people of color, queer people, trans people, gender nonconforming people, disabled people, you will begin to internalize them, but also I don't even want to say internalize, because I feel like that's robbing the agency that's often involved with how we modify ourselves and our bodies in response to the ways in which we're surveyed and maybe like experience material violence or want to mitigate that or prevent that from happening.
I kind of think of it in terms of like survival strategies.
Yeah,
at a certain point, it was necessary.
Yeah, and it's not even just like, it's like, oh, I do this because I hate myself. It's like, no, it's because like I can go to work in the next hour and like ensure that I'll have an okay time on the subway.
Yeah.
Versus like, then I'll be thinking about it at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Harry, you said the word that I keep coming back to around this, which is the word agency, which I think that being able to remake our bodies is like the most profound agency we have, right?
Having I agree.
Like, right?
Sorry.
That was so perfect.
But there are ways in which that becomes self-defeating in a way. And I think about sort of the gay male remaking of the body. I wrote an essay ages ago where I really sat with this question and thought really hard about like why gay men are so obsessed with the gym and their bodies. An essay, yes, Teebs. You can read 2 copies of it. I'll send it to you.
Okay. hey, you know what essay is French for? Try.
Teebs is trying.
Thank you, Vinge. I got it. I'm going to carry that with me. Thank
but
you.
The notion that like as queer people, we grow up with so little agency and feeling always like we're going to be harmed for our bodies. So it like gives us an opportunity to be like, no, I'm going to remake myself. But then it's like when your self-worth is tied to your body and then you start getting older, that sense of agency you have, of course, is being taken away by time and the fact that all bodies are fallible, and the only thing we know to be true about bodies is they get old and sick and die. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like if you build a sense of self around your power to control your own body and how it looks and how it feels, that is a very shallow in a lot of ways way to be in the world.
Yeah. I mean, and it essentially being about control again, I think like goes back to feeling out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Not just of like your body, which you obviously are, you have to admit that you don't control, you know, people's reaction to your body, but that like the loss of being like, why am I hated?
Yeah.
Why do people hate me because of my body and what I do with my body?
Well, it's like one of the things that I'm thinking about here is, like you mentioned earlier, our bodies being a tell. And that's one of my biggest questions, too, is that like my relationship with my body, and I think for so many queer people, our relationships with our bodies have so much to do with what our bodies communicate to other people or what people receive about us from our bodies. And from such early ages, sometimes for some of us, our bodies are communicating things that we don't even realize. Mm-hmm. So like before I understood what it actually was to be attracted to a boy, like I remember like people in my family who would say all those things, don't walk in this way, don't hold your hands in this way, don't cock your hip in this way or your head in this way, because it communicates something that you don't want to be and you don't want the world thinking that you're that. And that's connected to so many things, right? Because there's a protection in being able to pass. That's why the concept of passing exists for so many different people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm even thinking of why I'm attracted to the men that I'm attracted to. Mm-hmm. And like Teebs, you've even talked about like your attraction to men who are really tall is because you're like, if some shit goes down, I want to know that you're going to fight with me. Yeah. And for me, it really goes back to this idea of feeling protected, feeling safe, and feeling power where I think I was trained to think I didn't have any.
But that's you asking for that safety from another person's
right.
body.
For me it's manifested in a very different way than I think it does for so many people, because like I don't have a gym membership, and I mean that's partly because when I first moved to New York I couldn't afford one, and even though I could now, it's just not something I've thought of doing. But I look for it in other people, which is very interesting to me, because I think about the fact that like I look for that from the same kinds of men that or boys at that age that terrified me, like at that point. Like, I couldn't go into that space that for you that you found to be so erotic.
Going off something you said, Dennis, that like I wanted to just like go around the room, sort of like when you asked, like, do you remember the first time you were turned on by a man? Also, like, does anyone want to share like the first time they remember being told, maybe like by a parent or a close family member or a friend, don't do that with your body?
I remember like my auntie pulling my mom aside and telling her that I had an identity crisis.
This was last month, wasn't it, T?
And one thing about my mother is, like, she does not suffer a motherfucking fool. Yeah. And
wait,
she
are you just, gay?
Am I? You know, so I waffle.
Gay for waffles. Yeah. Gay for waffles.
I waffle. Chicken and waffles. Yeah, that's me. My sexuality. And my mom was just like, she just looked her dead in the eye and was like, you need to keep that shit to your motherfucking self. Do not say that in front of my boy.
Woo! I love mom.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, that's a kind of the reason why I can be a little bit defensive, or like I can be a little bit like step the fuck off. It's just that's how my mom was.
Yeah, cool. Dennis. I have a sister who's kind of like that, but I don't know if I can remember my first time, but I remember my family and I were just talking about this over the holidays because we got together for my mom's birthday, and my mom grew up in Philadelphia, and she grew up in the hood and like in the projects, and a lot of my family in there still lives like in really rough parts of Philly. And so we're all standing there together, and they all started talking about how whenever our family would visit, like I would be there and I would be like in the hood, like staying with my family, and I would just be prancing up and down the street like the gayest little flower you've ever seen. And they would all be like, Dennis, no, you have to stop. Like, you cannot do that here. Like, that's not like okay. And I mean, I grew up in a really religious family, but like they were pretty, like they knew gay people. They just like wanted to protect me. But, that's like one of my most prominent memories is like my cousins who were like my age or a couple of years older being like, no, don't play with that Barbie. Like, here's a truck. Like, don't walk that way down the street. Like, just, and I would just, I mean, I just pray. I didn't give a fuck.
And in their own, I mean, and they were trying to protect you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think like I remember, so, this is Tommy. On the reservation, like in elementary school, we were bused to an elementary school outside the reservation. And so we had to take the bus with like mostly white kids, and the elementary school is mostly white. And I remember the first time somebody questioned my gender specifically. Mm-hmm. It was a boy on the bus who was like, are you a boy or a girl? And the thing is, like, I had long hair like all the men in my family. Like, any people just have long hair. And, you know, I was a baby. And my cousin Rainbow turned to him and was like, well, you know how there are Tom boys? He's just a Tom girl.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It was so beautiful. I mean, that's a nickname was spawned, of course. but what I understood of that name, I would later know to call it Hard Femme.
Hard Femme, yeah.
And I remember because like later on, like that day I got off the bus, I went to the thrift store where my mother worked, and I found a VHS tape of Wayne's World. And I bought it, and I remember watching it, and then Cassandra comes on stage, played by Tia Carrera, she's just, like, the lead singer of this metal band. She, like, kicks dudes' asses, literally. She is actively disdainful of one of the dudes in the movie.
And she's so hot.
And she's so hot, and she can fucking wail, and she has all these fashions, and I was like, oh, she's a Tom girl, too.
Yes. It's so funny. I feel like so many of us had the experience of really being taught to hate our othered or different or femme bodies by peers, and that certainly was the case for me. I was like horribly bullied, and I didn't view myself as queer at that age. But like all of the little boys who were my parents were pretty chill, but all of the little boys who were terrorized by their fathers about how they had to be then terrorized me at school. And there was no way to like, there was no safety from that. There just wasn't. Like, I was just terrorized and I didn't know how to do anything different. Like, again, I'm not super in touch with my body. So like, I couldn't put on straight drag. Like, I just couldn't. I hit puberty mad late. like my voice was really high.
Like, really?
I was attracted to women, right? So I didn't get, like, in a way, it wasn't queerness that made me othered, quote unquote.
You didn't just know, like, exactly what it was.
I didn't. Because when I found queerness, it was like a revelation. I was like, oh my God, thank God that there's this framework that I can use to understand why I was sort of bullied my whole life. It was kind of a nice, like, in a way, like, having attraction to both men and women and people of all genders is actually, I like choose to be gay and queer because it sort of is like, that's the lived experience I had without necessarily being able to name it at that time. Mm-hmm. But no, it was absolutely like my peers who completely took out the pathologies that their fathers took out on them, they then enacted on me. And, they were kids. I can't blame them for that.
That's what children do, right? Yeah. Like, when I think about even, like, my cousins, like, they were reenacting the ideas and the, I mean, not that they were traumatizing me, but, like, that's what they were being told. And, like, when we think about the kids at school, like, children who enact trauma are being traumatized.
Yeah. I have a question for the group. Oh, go ahead, Aaron.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if this is going to open up another can of body yaddy yaddy worms, but I think a lot about my mom when you say that, when she both is someone who, in private ways, when I was younger, like, would support cross-gender play and stuff, but then sort of, I remember in public, telling me not to swing my hips when I walk, or just like that memory very specifically down the hall of my elementary school when it was just us two in the hallway, just like being told not to do that. Mm-hmm. But also she's someone who it was coming from a protective place,
right?
Mm-hmm. But one that was damaging and harmful. Mm-hmm. In the same way that a lot of the issues I have around, like, or mostly more so had around my body and stuff was coming from her. That was in many ways a recapitulation of, I don't know if that's the right word, her own body image issues and things that she had learned and has told me in stories from when she was a teenager struggling with, where it was coming from her trying to make sure that I had an easier experience in high school, but actually just didn't help at all.
It doesn't help.
It was like a really terrible Irish Catholic way of, like, I don't know. She would talk about how she chose not to raise us in the church because she had such a shitty experience, but she didn't account for secular Catholicism sneaking its way through.
And you know what feels really fucking good?
What?
Snaking your hips when you motherfucking walk. It feels so good. Once I because, like, I feel like that got socialized out of me, but once I realized, like, that's how I prefer to walk, my body just felt so much better. Much more centered. I was like, this is how I fucking walk.
This is how I walk.
You can kick rocks. Cram it with walnuts. Like, I'm good.
And Teebs and I, we talk about this all the time. If you have a problem with me, we can fight. Like, yeah. I will actually, like, that's the hard friend.
I literally have hooked up with a ballet dancer who said that, like, I have naturally curved, like, arched ballet dancers' feet, like, preternaturally predisposed or whatever for that art. And I'm like, and I have been denied heels my entire life.
Listen.
And they don't hurt it. Like, you know what I mean, Dennis.
Yeah, they don't hurt at all.
Yeah, I know. They actually feel fucking great.
Yeah.
This relates to my question that I wanted to ask of the group. Do you like your bodies now?
Oh,
2018.
This morning, I fucking loved it. It was great. What a fuck. I was just thinking about what a turnaround it's been from the other 29 years I was alive.
Wow.
You have earned it. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So good. What do you think was the process of that? Because, like, of loving your body? Appreciating your body, or...
I mean, it continues to be, I don't want to say, like, oh, I love it all the time now. Mm-hmm. I just suddenly yesterday realized that yesterday I hit a, it's very conditional. And I had been in a really shitty, like, dysphoria funk for about 2 weeks now, which is longer than it's been for a long time. Started to think I was transitioning backwards. Didn't like what I've seen in the mirror.
A dysphoria funk, you said.
Yeah, dysphoria funk. My fave subgenre of 70s music, dysphoria funk. And I don't know what happened. Just like 2 days ago, was looking in the mirror and was like, wow, my arms are huge. My shoulders are huge. Cut off everything on the sides of my, I wonder if they'll ever learn how to shave rib cages down. Just like all this kind of shit. Cut off half my face, please. Going out in public with, like, a scarf wrapped around half my face. And suddenly, like, as of last night, I look in the mirror and everything is not only fine, but great. And I, which is just, it, and that is something though that I will acknowledge that despite the ups and downs is not something I ever felt prior to transitioning or realizing that I was trans. When my body's dysmorphia was like a really unexamined, unacknowledged, misunderstood expression of my gender dysphoria, where I would view myself if I liked what I looked in looked like in the mirror, it would be because I was thin or skinny or it was still never like, oh, I just like this. It was always like, you are worth liking, if that makes sense. So I don't know if any that's I don't know what are everyone else's thoughts about their.
I gotta say, my relationship to my body is extremely fraught. I mean, I've had an eating disorder since I was like 15 years old, which is also consequently when I became sexually active. So, like, that's not the connection between those two things isn't lost on me. You know, I went through bouts of anorexia as a teenager. I was bulimic for a year when I was 19 years old, and I mean, I believe in talking about this because I believe in exercising it. And and you know, if this is like triggering or whatever, feel free to turn it off and fast forward. The journey of my 20s was an understanding that, you know, writing was really healing for me in a lot of ways. One of them was because I understood what I actually gave a fuck about. I mean, it's a process of self-excavation, right? But it was like, I care about telling stories. I care about writing. Like, I don't make my money from my body, you know, or, well, you know, I did sell socks, whatever, but like, that was different. and also a lot of therapy because I kind of wanted to disappear. You know, and I had to learn what I had to learn, first of all, not just that I wanted to disappear, but like I didn't want my voice to sound like anything. And I had to learn how to come back to myself. I had to learn how to shout. You know what I mean? I had to learn how to like just plant my feet in the ground and like walk in a singular direction and be like, I deserve taking up space, you know? And that also is just like I learned like with, you know, with therapy with Dr. John, it was like he would just be like, just learn to have a joy in moving your body and just breathing and lifting your shoulders and like and like arcing your arm, you know, and just like bending your knees. Like that is a joyous experience. This is your body.
Yours.
You know, and I started to understand it and come to the realization that, you know what? My body changes, right? And like when, especially when I'm writing and I'm committing to something, like I don't get to go to the gym all the time. I don't get to do the things that I normally would. My diet kind of becomes shitty, but like I care about making that book, about putting that thing into the world. And that is where I draw my self-worth from. But I will say this too, that in understanding the joy in having a body and in breathing and in inhabiting my body fully, it was like, I understood something. And that was like, you know what? I don't have a body that anyone would like to commit to marble. But marble is a stone of death. Like, that's the opposite of sex. You know, it's cold.
It doesn't move.
It doesn't move. You know, I have a body that moves. And you know what? You know what I know that I have? Ask me what I have.
What do you have?
I'm sexy. Sexy. Bitch. And I can fuck. And you know
say
what?
Say aloud thoughts with Teebs. Oh, can you all the thoughts out there? I'm sexy.
I'm sexy.
I'm
sexy. Yes.
Sexy, God, bitch.
And you know what? And you know what that means? Means it's not what you look like, it's what you be. You know? And I can be that, and that's what I am. And understanding that, I was like, that is so much better than like the me who was like 140 pounds but super self-monitoring and very miserable. You know what I mean? Like, so I love being this me. I love being me. That's all. I love me, my body. It's and you know what's weird? Because I kept talking about 2017 is that year that I fucked all those straight dudes. Got fucked by all those straight dudes. But one of the things that I learned, though, is that like, and I've, you know, I talked about this with my straight girlfriends, is like, they don't really care. They don't really care.
Oh my God.
They don't really care.
Straight men don't care.
Gay men care.
Gay men
care. Straight men don't care.
Oh, sorry. Those are my nails.
acrylics.
So just to compare the two things, thing I really miss about...
This is Heron again.
Oh, hey, what's up? thing I really miss about hooking up with gay men is that you... Okay, so I know that looking has maybe different, you know, divergent opinions upon it, the HBO show. But Andrew Haig?
Fugue State. I don't know.
Andrew Fugue State. His movie that he made, Weekend, from when I saw it like 5 or 6 years ago, I thought it really captured this thing that gay men are able to do so well, which is hook up with each other, spend like 48 hours together and just could, like, throw themselves headfirst into the limited time vulnerability and intimacy period that they both know is going to end at a certain point, and they're never going to see each other again, but aren't afraid to just be intimate and vulnerable and, like, fuck multiple times, spoon, cuddle, sleep over at each other's place, not have to, like, talk about it over and over and, like, immediately put up walls in that way. They put up the walls afterwards. Yeah. But in this way that I'm just like, straight guys, like, this could be better for both of us. Yeah. Like, can I at least sleep over? It's nighttime. Like,
the trains at night are not pleasant.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, there's maybe it's also, maybe it has to do with power and, like, sort of who's involved in the dynamic. So oftentimes I think that people with more power in some kind of way than another person will be aware of that power they have and, like, sort of shut the other person down in this, like, or send off vibes of, like, being like, oh, I'm in control of this, and I, like, better not give any, like, signs or something. So I feel constantly shut out, and it's like, dude, like, I don't know your fucking last name. You, like, didn't ask me a question about myself last night. We had great sex, and I would love to do that again. I don't want to fucking date you. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just, like, drives me crazy. They make you the hysterical crazy woman. Mm-hmm. It's wild.
Yeah. One thing is that earlier, Tommy, when you mentioned, you were like, I get a lot of my self-worth from my writing and, like, this and that. It was so interesting because in my head at that moment, I thought to myself, like, well, where does my self-worth come from? It just comes from being. Like, I exist. Oh, I exist, and that's enough.
We all need to be, like, way more Dennis.
Yeah.
Like we exist. We are people here. That's enough for us to demand everything.
Like, that's why we're always like, oh, Dennis is, like, the carefree one.
Yeah.
Because it is just, like, a thing about you being.
Backslash the one who came up upper middle class. Because, like, Irish Catholic people do not feel that way about being in the world. We just don't.
Can it be both?
Can't it be both? I feel like that's one thing my parents taught me. And one thing, well, going back to our earlier conversation, like, people around me were like, oh, you're too feminine, you need to butch up in these different ways, like, as a child. My parents, never once did my mother or my father enact that on me that I can remember. Never one time. Like, they are very religious, and, like, that, once it started to happen, like, that was an issue that we had to deal with and negotiate for sure, that was really challenging. But they were never like, you need to change yourself. They were just like, you exist and you matter. And that's like all they focused on.
That's a great place to end.
That's wonderful. I'm feeling like I'm full, but I could fit one more thing inside me.
Dennis knows how I feel.
I just arched my back, y'all.
And this week for our dessert, I believe Heron has an article for us.
I do, but first, some quick recommendations. One, Urban Decay, heavy metal, glitter, you put it on your eyes like nail polish. Love it. Two, reading things in your mentions on Twitter in good faith after reading them in bad faith. Just give yourself 5 minutes. Oh, you're like, hey, this pissed me off. Amazing. Wait, let me just try to approach it. What could they possibly be saying? And then you realize this person is actually saying a nice thing to you. Just try it sometime. Most of all, though, I want to say that there is this essay that I don't know if... So, is it fair to assume that the majority of your listeners are gay men?
No.
Fuck me.
I don't know.
I think probably because of our partnership with Into, they're probably the majority of them are.
Majority.
That's true, yeah.
Okay. So, I'm not saying exclusively, but, like...
No! Gay men are trash!
Come on. Hey, look at this pipe. It's the pipe.
Ooh, I'm always trying to look at
it. It is not a pipe.
What?
It is
not a pipe. I didn't even mean to. Fuck.
That was perfect.
Yeah, that's a sissy pipe over there. Yeah, you're listening, audience. Bunch of sissy pipes. And also sissy pussies, because, like, not all gay men have pipe. So, I'm fucking drunk. drunk and inclusive. There's an article that everyone should read, and it's by Andrea Longchu. It's called On Liking Women. It was published by N+1, I think about a month and a half ago, but the internet version removed its paywall about 3 weeks ago, and it took all the pockets of the internet that, like, I exist on by storm. I'm not so sure that it penetrated gay pockets of the internet, as gay male pockets of the internet, quite as hard as, like, lesbian leftist media, trans women, N plus one fans, if that's like a hive,
a
I don't know.
It's a thing.
As much like as like gay one. Male sides of things, with the exception of Ty Mitchell, fucking like great porn performer slash drag queen, Kelsey Dagger from Brooklyn. Like, she's fucking great. Follow her on Twitter. So I think you should all read it. There's like one part that I wanted to read from it. A lot of it is about reframing the desire to be a woman as a desire to be a woman, not just a necessity, need, or urgency-based argument of, I'm trapped in the wrong body, I'm hurting, this would make me feel more comfortable. It's like, no, like, bitch, I want to be a woman. So here's, like, something I wanted to read.
Because women are better. That's all.
God!
And that's all. Like,
this is all so true.
Don't make me say valid, but, like, that's a reason. Not getting what you want has very little to do with wanting it. Knowing better usually doesn't make it better. You don't want something because wanting it will lead to getting it. You want it because you want it. This is the zero-order disappointment that structures all desire and makes it possible. After all, if you could only want things you were guaranteed to get, you would never be able to want anything at all. This is not to garner pity for sad trannies like me. We have enough roses by our beds. It is rather to say minimally that trans women want things too. The deposit of our desire runs as deep and fine as any. The richness of our want is staggering. Perhaps this is why coming out can feel like crushing. Why a first dress can feel like a first kiss. Why dysphoria can feel like heartbreak. The other name for disappointment, after all, is love. Follow her on Twitter, Theory Girl, theorygurl.
I'm literally following.
Tweet along
right
to
now.
Me. That's what the fuck I'm talking about. Yeah,
it's fucking great. And also, maybe some of you will realize you're actually fucking women.
Who snaps to that? That was a good dessert.
This episode of Food for Thought is made possible by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé and our partnership with Into, an online magazine for queer news and culture. What are you into? Head to intomore.com each week for a thoughtful new note from your podcast faves. Our engineer is Alex Mead Fox at Spaceman Sound Studios, and our producer is the talented galloping Italian stallion, Alexandra De Palma.
It's a pepperoni. It's a fettuccine.
I'm Tommy Teebs Pico. You can find me at Hey Teebs on all relevant social media.
I am Dennis Norris II, and you can find me on Twitter at the Earl Denden, theearldenden, and I have a chapbook out at ostpress.com.
Yes, Dennis, I am Joseph Osmondson. You can find me at www.josephosmondson.com and now in bookstores.
I'm Heron Walker, and my Instagram is private, and I also have a Finstagram, but you can follow me on Twitter at HARRONWAWKER. Someone took the non-phonetical spelling of my name.
You can listen to Food for Thought on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download golden audio goodness. Subscribe, rate, and review us 5 stars on iTunes, and Joe will post a shirtless selfie. JK, he's already going to do it.
He's done already. He doesn't own shirts.
Find us on Twitter and Facebook as Food for Thought Pod, and on Instagram as Gay Sluts Who Read. Sign up for our newsletter for episode insights, reading lists, and extra delectable content at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. And finally, send your questions, thoughts, concerns, and dick pics to thoughts@foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that's food, the number 4, and thought spelled how?
T-H-O-T.
Thanks for listening. See you next
Bye,
time.
Love you.
Bye. Bye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.